Welcome to another edition of Parhesia Hour here on Kaechung, 1630 a.m. in Los Angeles, California, Kaechung.org globally. On today's episode, I brought in some records that I realized I like a lot, but I also am aware many people don't like. And, you know, I started thinking about that. And, what do I make of that? Adjusting one's own preferences, questioning one's own preferences. And I thought I'd get into that. I mean, it's stuff. I brought in some Chris Corsano, drummer I like a lot, Andrew Cyril, someone with just a solo drum record. I'll get into that later. Marilyn Crispell, piano player I know from her work with the Anthony Braxton Quartet in the 80s. And, right now, of course, got some Sendra in the background. The theme music. I'm going to play this Chris Corsano first from The Young Cricketer, his album. And we'll get that going out. Thanks for listening. Thank you. I've explained this before to an extent, but I think most things are worth reiterating, especially if I imagine that no one has ever listened before. For example, if I am thinking about what we're listening to right now, and I'm thinking, what is it that attracts me to this? This terrible noise. And when I say terrible, why am I characterizing it as terrible? I'm characterizing that out of, like, a self-consciousness, more or less. You know, recognizing that, this is not going to be classified as pretty, for sure. And, I don't know, there's, like, I guess some objective measures one could take. If you were to, like, look at the frequency of it, the jaggedness. Does it harmonize with anything? Stuff like that. And I'll eventually explain the leap I'm making here. But I guess my suspicion is that it's sort of just that. It's kind of invented. You know, everything's invented, but it sounds like something that's only trying to be something that doesn't exist, which isn't even true. There are many terrible sounds coming through what's probably like the mouth of a saxophone, or it's like an instrument he built, like the headpiece or the mouthpiece, that's what I mean, plus like a tube or something. But it's sort of resisting everything else. Really, what I'm hoping to touch on today is, what do you do when you hate everything? By that I mean, when you know, you just find problems with everything. Yeah, you can do this forever. It can be a very sophomoric activity of being morose and cynical. Perhaps you could say it's easiest to seem discerning when you dislike something. And so I want to avoid that perspective. And that if you're just disliking things, you know, I think the more interesting question is to be like, why do I dislike these things? Personally, what I've spent much of my life doing is thinking I must be wrong for not enjoying these things sincerely. You know, like, I feel like my sincere reaction towards this, or my actual feelings, are that I'm not into it. Yet everyone around me seems to be excited about this, and I feel like I'll be an asshole, a party pooper, if I express my true opinion. So what do? You know, when you kind of have that question, you're like, so it often becomes easier to, like, learn about why other people like things and sort of stretch your taste to learn through what they like. I think there's lots to be said for that, lots to be gained in practicing such a thing. I think this is the part of the record that is a little easier to appreciate. Though, even given that, I'm like, man, this guy is a super tight drummer. I remember showing a video of him playing to a friend of mine who plays drums, and he was like, I don't know, he's kind of just doing the same pattern. And I was like, man, I don't even know what the pattern he's doing is. I just hear a bunch of cool things. Pushing and pulling. You know, manipulating sonic space in a dynamic way. I'm going to switch it up, though, to Cyril. So that's... that's kind of what I'm hoping to look at, is basically, I recently kind of came across this idea of a motivation to create being that you don't like anything that exists. So if you don't like anything that exists, you've got this motivation to create something, to make something exist that you do like. Seems like a clear logic there, I hope. There was this moment the other day. This is just a personal experience to see if anyone can relate. Through what I experienced, perhaps someone else experienced it. You know what I mean? I was doing stuff. I was playing the drums. I'm doing a radio show right now where I'm playing solo drums, so I think it'll probably be obvious that this is a taste I like and relate to. And I was getting bored. I was like, man, everything's boring right now. What's interesting? Like, what's exciting? I just feel like, why do I want to keep going? And then I was like, oh, I'll be exciting right now. And just kind of said this like moment of like, I'll challenge myself, and then burst forward with energy and was like, cool. I just created something that's at least for a moment making me interested and more engaged with reality. Or, you know, not reality, but engage with my environment versus closing off my osmotic membranes. Just made that up. Letting things in, letting things out, being lifted by one's surroundings. Which leads me to one thing that I think is worth bracketing, is just engaging, being engaged. I guarantee there are books galore covering this, and you could look into them. But I guess I'm less interested in representing like an existing body of knowledge than just chiming in with my own thoughts. And, you know, really, the only interest I have in sharing my own thoughts is seeing if anybody else has thoughts on these same things. And isn't that the beauty of being able to broadcast out to lots of people? Because you're like, man, I'm just going to say some things and hope that someone else has thoughts on these things. Wouldn't that be a cool world where people are thinking about these things I'm thinking about, and they can assist me in thinking about them? Because that's really what's going on. I've set up a couple methods for people to participate in thinking about these things. One through Twitter. It's at Parhesia Hour, PARHESIAHOUR. I've got a phone in front of me. I can look at it. The other is through the K Chung Radio Instagram. I'm logged into it. I post an image about the show. There's a comments section. Just throwing that out there. And you know, if I'm to be honest with myself, a reason I throw that out there is because when you're sitting there and you're talking by yourself to yourself, but in a public forum, criticisms flow in, potential criticisms. When you don't have a real person there to actually give you feedback, then you invent your own feedback to give yourself. And, or at least, you know, I'm generalizing, saying an experience, not the experience. There, that was answering a criticism there. But you see where I'm going with this. I'm leading in to what I'm really trying to get into on the show is, if you don't like anything, but you want things to exist that you like, you have to create a thing you like. And what's the route to that? Do you answer all your own criticisms that you apply to everything? Is it about being like, well, this is the criticism I would apply to something else that would lead me to disliking it? Should I now start piling those on anything I do? I'd say if you do that, you know, too much, too quickly, you know, you're not going to get much done. What's that? Like, it's not even a Philip Guston quote. For some reason, it's him quoting John Cage, I think, but he gets attributed it a lot. Like, when the magic's really happening, it's when your friends leave the studio, your mother leaves the studio, your father leaves the studio, your teachers leave the studio, your children leave the studio, and when things are really clicking, you too leave the studio. And, like, his studio being, him painting. But the idea there being, sort of interacting with not a bunch of opinions, but a bunch of forces that are more subconsciously moved. I suppose because when you get into opinions and you get into creating things off of what people say they want, then you have to keep in mind that, like, people lie all the time. Like, to themselves, to you. They don't know they're lying. It's not a malicious act. People just often aren't good at being honest with themselves. They're often hiding from what they actually fear to be true. They're hoping to make themselves look better to other people, look better to themselves. Maybe they just, you know, they're networking. There are so many motivations to, at least to a degree, lie to yourself. And perhaps it's impossible to do nothing but that. It's sort of just choosing a narrative to tell yourself, which that's another field of study that we'll get into on future episodes. So I think it then becomes a matter of, okay, well, if I can't trust people to, you know, give me, you know, it's, I'm not saying this is all the time, but just in general, you know, say you do, you work on something and someone's like, good job. You're like, do they really think that? Do they think that because, are they just saying that because they think my ego is too fragile to hear what they really think? Or maybe they do just think that. Or maybe they think that, but they said it in a strange way that doesn't really connect to my experience of this thing. You know, people are going to have that different experience, and you can figure out what to do with that. Then, but I think that's exactly it, is figuring out what to do with it. And I often think of that as being a matter of, like, what is the universe saying? like, what's actually happening here? What forces are underlying the these manifestations? What led to this? And figuring out that as a method for getting at some sort of truth, or not even a truth, but, like, something of value, something that's just not throwing another piece of the same to just keep things burning. You know what I'm talking about? I'm gonna step back for a second, cohere some things, and let this track. First track on this album by Andrew Cyril, What About? Play out a bit, because I don't know, this is like a kind of cool part of the song, I think. You know what's kind of tight? It's a cool part of the song, because it's a loop. The record's skipping. You know what else? I've listened to this, and it skipped here before. And I always remember thinking, man, I gotta record that. That's a really good loop. So, you know, of course, this makes me think, it was at this moment that my attention was most caught. In this long-form drum performance. What's so appealing about the loop? One, it gives you a thing to latch onto. You know, every other part of his drumming happens for an instant and then disappears, which, side bracket that, what's the advantage of having something happen for an instant? You can't really criticize it too much, because it doesn't ever happen again. So what's the use of criticizing it? It's never going to happen again. Unless it does start happening again. So, like, just let it be. It was what it was. You're really looking at the sort of overall frequency reading. You know, if you just compress it all into a moment, what chord does it hit? Or stretch it out? I think it's often what's going on with performances like this. But with this loop, I don't know, it's like you can get into it. Like, you can get really deep into it, and, man, that sounds cool. And so, there's definitely a lot of value in that. Last episode, played music largely based off loops. And I was playing it for someone, they're like, man, this is really stony music. And I was like, huh, I thought of it as driving music. And I suppose both, and then she was describing, she's like, oh, because, like, these loops just kind of keep going, and so you just sort of, like, fall into it. I was like, oh, I guess that's, like, driving. You know, you're just kind of doing this repetitive activity, but giving a soundtrack to it, and while the loop is changing, your surroundings constantly changing, so, seems worthwhile. Anybody want to see what comes after this skip in the record? So this right now is the same drummer who was just playing, Andrew Cyril, but playing with Cecil Taylor. On the record, Conquistador. This old architect guy in San Francisco gave me this record. We start talking about music, and he was like, "Have you heard of Andrew Cyril? You ought to check him out." He was this mathematician who started playing drums and then loved it so much, like, quit his position at the university teaching math. I don't know. I'm making that up. But I'm ready, everyone. Parhesia. That's really what I'm getting to. Everything I'm saying kind of comes down to this suspicion of mine, perhaps forming into a position. This is not just a suspicion, this is my position. That being honest with oneself can accomplish so much. But there's a big question as to what does that mean? You can think of it in terms of you can be really nice to yourself, flattering yourself. Be honest, like, flatter yourself. Just tell yourself, you know, everything you want to hear about yourself. See if that gets you anywhere. I don't know. Sometimes it works. Maybe, you know, boosts your ego. Kind of a Kanye thing. Like, tell yourself you're really great, and you'll reach the manic heights necessary to create a truly transcendent thing. But perhaps you do that and no one else thinks it's that cool. You know? So perhaps it would behoove you to be like, okay, maybe this isn't the genius stroke that I was initially excited about. Perhaps I should be honest with myself about the real implications of this. By implications, I really just mean, like, repercussions. By repercussions, I don't mean a negative thing. I just mean things react to things. Anything that comes as a result of an action, of a thing. And by action, you know, I'm thinking about thought there. Anytime molecules are moving and reacting, you know, there are repercussions. Nothing exists in a vacuum. Everything is reacting to everything all the time, just to very different degrees. That's slightly digress, but that's sort of the nature of this talk program. I remember thinking, like, just thinking about, okay, if everything really is, you know, everything's always happening. Things aren't happening in vacuums where they're not affecting each other. Everything's affecting things to a certain extent. Like, I could, you know, I could more easily summarize it as the way people describe butterfly effect. You know, go back in time and change one thing and it ripples. Well, I'm saying you don't need to go back in time to observe that phenomena. Things affect things today. You can change something now and it'll affect the future, you know. It doesn't need to be a situation of like, oh no, I went back and now the present's different. It's like, no, you're acting now and you're changing the future with your actions. Ever so slight ways, you know, a leader of a country, that person's actions have much bigger repercussions than mine or yours or someone's, you know, whatever, or like a dog's. But there's something happening. What I just realized is funny. That basically led me to a sort of defensive astrology, like thinking of it as, man, this is a thing invented in times where people had felt they had so thoroughly examined, to the extent that they felt they could, everything within range of themselves. They're like, man, I know how this affects me. I'm figuring out how this affects me, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I see these stars and I see this stuff, like, all the time. And, you know, I get that they're far away, but I still see him all the time, so the light's here, and it must be affecting me in some way. And I sort of love it as being this result of, like, well, we figured out all this shit, so even though these are really far away, like, they gotta have some effect, you know? It's not like we're not at all connected. There's a great distance between us. So I just think, I like thinking of it as a really extremely far apart connection. That's all. But really, it's about frequency. I don't know. More than distance, I think. If you see a thing every day and it's far away, it can still affect you more than a thing that's close and you don't pay attention to. That, you know what I mean? Anyway,
what I'm getting to is being honest with oneself. So I think, you know, if you're thinking about being honest with yourself, I think there can be this mistake to get caught up in. I think I remember there was this moment in the show Girls where the character's like, any mean thing you could say to me, I've already thought about 7 times. And you're like, yeah, cool, I get that. Like, she's saying, look, this isn't news to me. This thing, this critical thing, I've thought about this. And it's like, okay, so what's to be said about that? I feel like that can be used as giving oneself permission to be critical in this fashion to others. I feel like I've perhaps caught myself guilty of that, being like, well, if I'm going to be harsh towards myself, then I can be harsh towards others, because this is, you know, treat others as you'd want them to treat you. Okay, I think there's potential mistakes there, and that while in this fantasy world, or this ideal world, I love the idea of 100% parhesiastic relationships amongst all humans. Now I'm just realizing that's like the movie The Invention of Lying. Basically, you're just being honest, and one of the definitions or key aspects of parhesia is no rhetorical devices. Like, you're not trying to convince someone of your perspective. You're just saying, this is my perspective, which to me is just a sincerity. You're just saying, this is what I think. I'm not making a judgment about it. I'm not saying this is bad. I'm just being honest with you. I think when you're not doing that, when you're not just saying what you actually think, then you're having to apply these, like, bends, and like, you're like limboing under like a situation, and it's uncomfortable. You're gonna be less smooth in how you're moving. Things are gonna be stilted. Energy's gonna die. It's just, I don't know, I just don't think it's an ultimately the most sustainable way of existing, to have to be, like, hiding what you actually think. And it's a bummer that there are so many reasons to, in the world. And, I mean, I think a lot of it is, well, a suspicion. Help me think through this. I've been getting so much awesome feedback. One person just sent me a message saying, Kern, I suspect that this is because of insecurities. People might be insecure about a thing and not comfortable facing it. Well, you know, I have an idea about that. I love the idea of being able to present one's honest opinion while simultaneously presenting yourself as a comfortable person to be vulnerable around. Like, okay, what I mean is, if this exposes a vulnerability, if a certain, not a truth, because it's not about it being true, it's just about it being, you know, someone's truth, you know, being comfortable around someone else's truth, hopefully you're comfortable around that person. And I love the idea of it not being painful, like figuring out a way for a thing to not be painful to face a reality, because it's like, man, it's reality. Like, by reality, I mean not the only... you're noticing I'm feeling very hesitant about a lot of the language I'm using. because I feel like it's so easy to jump on, and I know what I mean. But what I'm saying is, okay, lots of things exist. I'm talking about a situation where someone's saying, hey, this is my opinion, it exists. Whatever you think about it, I'm just letting you know this is actually what I think. I'm not trying to hide behind it. I am saying, this is what I think. Can you help me think about this? This is basically the premise of this show. It's saying, like, I'm not trying to deceive you and make you think better of me. I don't want you to think worse of me. I just want you to know this is actually what I think. And can we think about this together? I think that's kind of the key. It's sort of being like, look, I'm not laying this down as a declaration, like a line in the sand, like, you either think what I think, or I hate you. That's not a good situation, in my opinion. I don't think that'll ever, like, I don't think that type of thinking is gonna lead to much in the world, much worthwhile, let alone positive. So I really like trying to kind of investigate I guess you could take it on a case-by-case basis. Sometimes you have a history with a person where they're going to be real prickly around you because of past behavior. And you can say, man, what was it about my past behavior that caused this defensiveness and prickliness? And how can I adjust that now? That's one way. And of course, in saying this, I'm trying to use the technique of being honest with oneself in reflecting about, like, why is this situation difficult? Why is this person angry at me? what's actually happening here? And, trying to figure it out. I don't know. You know, like, versus getting caught up in, like, it's because they're mean. And, you know, obviously, I feel like the worst thing to do is to, like, blame other people, blame the other party. Eventually, you have to realize that if the other party's trying to put blame on you, you know, don't be fooled. Like, if their solution is to make you feel bad about yourself, there's not too much wisdom going on from their end. So you shouldn't take it too heavily, because the solution to a situation is never, or is rarely, that it's one person's fault. Takes two to tango. Takes everything to do everything. You know, things aren't so isolated. So if you're dealing with someone who refuses to acknowledge that, man, you're going to be dealing with a difficult person. And guess what? I'm describing most people at some point. If you push into people, it's really easy to find things that they don't want to investigate. And hey, brings me to another point I wanted to get to. What's reasonable to expect someone to want to face in a conversation? I suppose it very much depends on your relationship with the person. You know, how close am I with this friend? Can I tell them what I really think about this thing they're telling me about? Will they hate me if I tell them? How can I say, hey, you know, I don't like this at all. This thing you're so excited about, don't like it. I don't know. It's like weird, but I don't know. It's also like not that hard. I've done it a bajillion times. That's how you have friends. versus a nervous, arm's length, acquaintances who you're like afraid that they're opinion of you will shift at any moment. Maybe you're afraid of that because you think that about them. Oh, that's another thing, to stick with what I posted on the Instagram as flattering oneself. I definitely have this technique that is perhaps not the best, of instantly, like, having fun thinking of the easiest unflattering evaluation of myself or my actions. Like, you know, I feel like to flatter yourself in your own assessment is you're not doing yourself any favors. You know, you might as well be like, I could do better. I could try harder. You know, there were issues. So there's, you know, immediate tendency can be to go the opposite direction. Be like, man, what's the most unflattering? And I've definitely done that. We're all sort of like jokingly be like, oh, well, I guess no examples coming to mind because they're just things that happen in a moment and then disappear. And I don't really put much stock in saying them. And then I'll have someone look at me and they're like, really? Is that what you think you're doing right now? And I'm like, oh, man. They don't realize. I'm just like, I'm just making a joke. I'm just being like, you could say this. It's like the joke is basically like, one could say this. One could like think really lowly of me and have a super like ungenerous, unflattering, really critical reading of me. And by acknowledging that, I'm laughing about that I could think that, but I'm retaining that I can have my own thoughts on it. And sometimes sharing that out loud, that I've learned, like, maybe be careful. In that, like, is someone going to think that you actually think that about yourself? Like, maybe. You just said it. You've given them reason to think that. You know, watch out. Watch out for going to the extreme. Which also relates to the tendency to just be mean to oneself, you know, as a form of being discerning, just being like, oh, I'm bad, blah, blah, blah. Like to see optimism and kindness, you know, that kind of side of the spectrum as like undiscerning and naive. This record has ended, which is okay. Because we've got more. And on this topic, there was a good example of these things, where Marilyn Crispell, who I mentioned at the beginning of the program, she plays piano. I know her through the Anthony Braxton Quartet. And in this book, Forces in Motion, which I've probably mentioned to anyone who's like hung out with me and tripped out on music, because it's great. This journalist interviews all the members of the quartet, including Marilyn Crispell. She's the only female member of the quartet, and so the journalist, you know, ends up talking to her, this is like the mid-85, about feminism. And people kind of commenting on she'll play very aggressively. And people be like, oh, that's masculine, and, you know, are you angry? And, you know, they kind of talk about it. She's like, oh, no, like, that's a strange characterization. It's, you know, it's energy, and she's kind of talking about her thing. And then they hit this moment where the journalist, who's this, like, progressive British guy, who kind of is a little frustrated that the way Marilyn talks about things is not lining up with his feminist ideas. Like, she's not as into what he's saying. She's sort of like, I don't really think that's that important, or like that category's a big deal. And he's getting like, he's like, what? Like, and then he starts, you know, reflecting, me like, I realize the absurdity of me being like the male in this situation, like frustrated that this female doesn't have more like her views on feminism aren't as supportive as mine or whatever. And she sort of had this kind of this very individual view on it, where I got the sense that her perspective she wasn't being critical of ideas in feminism, like, I believe that women should be, like, subjugated to the dominance of males. Nothing like that. She was just saying, like, the way in which you're talking about it, I think, simplifies things, and that individuals can have their own feelings about their relationships to other people, and like that was her view. She didn't really articulate it in exact, you know, those words. I'm just kind of guessing at what was happening between, in this misunderstanding between the two of them. But anyway, what I guess her views, in my opinion, have led her to make some interesting music. So they seem worth paying attention to. And in fact, I would like to play some of it. This is a duo between Marilyn Crispell and Tyshawn Sorey in 2014, so this is nice. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I just like this this part of it.
So, as usual, on Parhesia Hour, we're not gonna have any conclusive thoughts, so to speak. And I was thinking, why is that? And I realized, it's because you kind of only conclude thoughts for someone. Like, someone, you're communicating with someone, and they say, and you're talking about something, and they're like, what do you mean? And you have to put the thought in a form that they understand. So you have to find a way to, like, at least for the moment, have some sort of conclusion, some sort of a cohesiveness that another person can understand, which immediately reminded me of this conversation from this book of, like, writings by and of, like, interviews and stuff of Philip Guston. I don't know. Painter I like a lot and reference a lot because I just read everything about him and whatnot. And there's this conversation with, like, Morton Feldman and Guston and this other, like, Zukovsky? No, it's not Zukovsky. But anyway, they're talking and they're kind of saying, like, okay, you know, when you're creating something, it exists in this amorphous, you know, pure aesthetic thought space. And so why do you have to take that and articulate it, you know, through your medium, through your art? Like, what are you... who are you articulating it for? What decision are you making? And then someone says, for the weakest part of myself. And I was like, man, I love that. Like, what you're choosing to conclude is sort of the weakest part of yourself, the part of yourself that needs this conclusion, that, like, isn't okay with sort of having this experience be unarticulated, personal. Yeah, mostly personal, I suppose. And the weakest part, you know, that's a characterization, and he said it, you know, partly to be funny, but also, as I was saying earlier, sort of a comedy through unflattering self-analysis, uncanny honesty with oneself. Yeah, and then that's kind of it. So basically what I'm saying is, not talking to anyone, so why do I need to conclude any of these thoughts? maybe if someone has a question, then it's like, oh, well, I can answer that question. Love answering questions, guys. So much easier than so many other things, because you're just like, I don't know, I'll think about it right now. And within the universe of this situation, which is a very limited one, because it's got a very clear directive, answer this question, things can be a lot easier to accomplish. I want to conclude the program with the other side of the Cecil Taylor record, more so than this that's going on in the background. I don't know, we could. It is, like, pretty badass. Especially there's a video, and I'm, like, looking at it right now. However, I don't know. The Cecil Taylor one's just called With, and then in parentheses, Exit. And, actually, I like the idea of going out on this more contemporary pairing of two people doing things that, or a tradition that sort of, I don't know, let's just say began in the 60s. This type of duo shredding. Anyway, you know, just what are you accomplishing by lying to yourself, man? Think about it. That's the conclusion. You know, why lie to yourself? It's like just like disrespecting yourself. I had this friend who, well, I have the friend, but he used to say he felt like the people he felt most respected by were the people who just were, like, honest with him. And he's like, man, I can tell that you respect me because you think that I can handle your thoughts, and you don't think I'm, like, too afraid to face that. And you can apply that back to yourself. Do I respect myself? Am I honest with myself? Cool. I think it helps everything. Totally. Cool. Thanks for listening to Parhesia Hour on K-Chung.